Good evening, everybody. This is host Terry Lynn Coop on the Blue Plate Special, and on tonight's menu is Meg Gardner, author of Unsub, the book that Don Winslow said scared the hell out of him, and he dares you to put it down. Meg Gardner is the author of 13 thrillers. Unsub, her latest, features homicide detective Caitlin Hendricks. And Meg was born in Oklahoma and raised in Santa Barbara, California. She graduated Stanford Law School and practiced law in Los Angeles before she went on to teach writing at the UC Santa Barbara. And the part that just awes me is she's a three-time Jeopardy champion and now lives in Austin, Texas. Hi, Meg. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you, Terry Lynn?
I mean, that Jeopardy thing is just too cool.
That's the thing that always gets people. I mean, I could be the first person to land on Mars and, you know, save a ship full of puppies from, you know, hitting an iceberg. But people would say, yeah, Jeopardy, and that's what they remember.
One of my law school professors was a Jeopardy champion as well, and we were all just like, ooh. Because that's actually a great accomplishment. And like you said, talk about a conversation starter. But on to this, your new book, Unsub. Tell me about it.
Unsub is a psychological thriller. It's about a legendary killer and the young cop who is hunting him. It takes place in the San Francisco Bay Area, and Caitlin Hendricks is a very young green detective. She's not even in homicide when the book starts, and she's drawn into this legendary case that turns hot again when this killer, who was known as the Prophet, reappears after 20 years and starts killing again. And he is the source of all her nightmares, and has been since she was a child, because her father was the original detective, lead detective on the case, who could never solve it, could never identify or capture the killer, and that has haunted him, ruined his life, and really haunted her and her whole family as well. So it's up to her now to try to figure out what the killer is doing, why he's back, where he's been, and get ahead of him and bring him to justice.
It's a great book. I'm really enjoying it. And was it Zodiac that was your inspiration?
Yeah, I hate to use the word inspiration when we're talking about a serial killer, but I grew up in California. Yes, I grew up in California, and the Zodiac case, I would say, sparked this novel, definitely. I remember people talking about him when I was a kid. I remember seeing a picture of the Zodiac in the, you know, a drawing of him in the newspaper, you know, this gunman wearing a black executioner's hood with this bizarre Zodiac symbol on the front, and being terrified by that and knowing that he was out there. Nobody knew who he was. They only knew that he could strike, you know, out of the dark at any time. And nobody ever caught him. He stopped killing on his own terms, disappeared, and, you know, I'm a thriller writer, so I think spooky thoughts and try to turn them into fiction. I thought, you know, if a killer like that withdrew from the field, what's to stop him from deciding he wants to pick up where he left off? And that was the genesis of Unsub. And the title, by the way, Unsub, stands for Unknown Subject. That's what law enforcement, particularly the FBI, calls the crook, the bad guy they're seeking in a criminal investigation.
And I think, if I remember, again, Criminal Minds, where you hear that all the time, is one of the reasons they use Unsub is they don't want to start giving him names like the Mercury Killer or the, you know, that type of thing. They want to keep it very cut and dried.
Precisely. All these, the public, the media, it's inevitable that if some killer does something dramatic or, you know, has a particular MO, that they want to give this person a name or a nickname, but law enforcement and particularly the FBI tries desperately to avoid mythologizing these killers. They don't want to call them, you know, the baby doll killer or the, you know, the My Pretty Pony Killer or whatever it would be. They just want him to be him or her or they to be known as the subject of the investigation. They don't want him to become a folk hero or people to start getting ideas that puts the killer in a good light.
But now you're talking about the My Pretty Pony killer. So I don't know. This one may have to happen. This book may have to happen.
I'm taking notes here as we speak.
Exactly. Well, on the, and we've discussed this before on Facebook, I'm from California, and every year when I was in eighth grade, they'd always take us on a class trip to San Francisco. Well, that happened to be the Zodiac Killer was still operating at that time, and that we went to Santa Cruz instead, just for that exactly,
that is,
if just for that exact reason. They
that's
didn't
wild,
want to
and I don't know if everybody, yeah, it's another Californian, you, I mean, you lived it even more than I did, but what the Zodiac did not only was, you know, to attack a number of teenage couples. He would, you know, pull up to parking spots late at night and gun them down, or and stabbed a couple that was, you know, having a picnic on at a lakeside. Shot a cab driver, but he also wrote these copious messages to the police and to the newspapers. He
yes.
really instilled terror in the public. He had he lusted for publicity. That was the thing. He played mind games. He published that he wrote all these bizarre ciphers and demanded that the papers publish them. And he would he particularly wrote that he was going to shoot kids coming off of school buses.
Uh-huh.
And that just, like your experience, it just threw the whole Bay Area, you know, millions of people into complete, you know, havoc, because there were whole school districts that, you know, had police escorts for all their school buses, you know, for an entire year because of this. Nobody knew whether it was real, and they couldn't take the chance that, you know, he was just toying with them. If you've ever seen Dirty Harry, that movie is based on the idea of the Zodiac. Pretty explicitly, and there's a scene at the end where the killer does take a school bus hostage, and that was directly
yes.
out of the idea of the Zodiac. So yeah, it was creepy times. It was the underbelly of the, you know, the summer of love. It was really weird.
But even so, I mean, there are no places immune from serial killers. When I moved to where I live in Kansas now, they had just uncovered a serial that was operating about 30 minutes north of me in Lacine, Kansas. They found bodies in barrels in his barn.
Well, isn't that charming? Welcome to Kansas. I know. No, I can sound flip, but the freaky and dreadful truth is that serial killers can be anywhere and everywhere, and you don't know who they are. The thing about that guy and the Zodiac in particular, murder was their hobby or their, you know,
yes.
their mission or whatever, but they managed to carry on seemingly ordinary lives the rest of the time. These are people who are members of the community. They, you know, they have jobs. They had a farm. They have families, lovers. So, you know, that's one reason I think we're so fascinated with them and the idea that, you know, there are these monsters that lurk among us, I think. That's what really gets us.
So what are some of the mind games that your Unsub plays with Caitlin?
Yeah, I should make clear that Unsub, I mean, it's not a thinly veiled version of the Zodiac case in any way.
Right,
it doesn't
right.
track the Zodiac murders. I was mostly fascinated and horrified and gripped by the idea of a killer who not only has this such rage, this expresses himself through this horrible violence, but really likes to dominate and terrorize people via letters, via codes, via rhymes. So the prophet in Unsub tends to kill couples and leave their bodies in public places displayed in strange tableaus, always with this ancient sign for Mercury somewhere on their bodies.
Mm-hmm.
And leaves lines of poetry, sometimes famous poetry, sometimes his own rhymes. And Caitlin is desperate to figure out whether these mean anything. Is this guy just psychotic, you know, delusional? Does he have some purpose behind them? And as he's returned, she is trying to put together the original case, which her father could not ever break, with these new rhymes and strange messages that the killer is scrawling in the, you know, on, in the dirt or in spray paint on the wall or written on a, you know, written on the victim. They seem to be becoming increasingly religious. She doesn't know whether that means something about him or about his mission. And it's, she is convinced, though, that if she can figure out what these messages mean, she can get ahead of him and uncover him and bring him in.
And that becomes her obsession.
Yeah, she knows what happened to her dad, that he became obsessed with the case, and he couldn't break it. It broke him in the end. And she became a cop anyway, but has tried to be very clear about setting a boundary, that she knows that she can slip from relentless pursuit into dangerous obsession. And so she tries to create extremely clear boundaries for herself, that, you know, the job stays at the station. She does not take it home with her, but as the case goes on and the killings become more personal, of course, she finds it harder and harder to stick to her rules, and she is getting drawn closer and closer to the edge of the cliff, which is part of the fun, I guess you'd call it.
Oh, definitely. Well, we don't read these to find out what a balanced, healthy life and perfect diet and exercise regime she has.
I know. Well,
so that's not why we read these.
A dear friend who says that my books go so fast, and she goes, I just wish that, you know, that the characters could, like, have a normal week and, like, go to the beach and play with the kittens. And I'm like, yeah, but nobody would read that. But, you know, in my mind, these are all real people, and they live real lives, but I don't, you know, they deliver meals on wheels, and maybe, you know, some of them go to church on Sunday, but that doesn't get put into the books. The books are about what happens when everything goes wrong. So,
well, if Kaylin is delivering meals on wheels, she's probably going to find a body while she's doing it. So,
yes, at the wheel of the Meals on Wheels van, yes.
Well, when I laid my first hand to trying to write something in kind of the legal thriller genre, I always say I wrote myself right into a corner and bored myself to death, because law, when done correctly, is actually kind of tedious, because you try and work out all of the mystery out of the whole thing before you go to court. And like I said, I just completely bored myself to death. So that's one of those that's the classic in the trunk, we'll never see the light of day books.
Well, yeah, and the first time I decided to write a novel, I'm a lawyer as well originally, mm-hmm. and I tried to write something that was very true to a legal case, and, you know, so that none of my professors or colleagues would ever see some kind of a slip. And then my novel was never finished because it was just deadly dull.
Boring.
Yes.
When my first book, I won an award with it, and I was on a podcast later, and he asked me, he goes, why do so many lawyers write novels? And I said, it's because we're bright, we're literate, and we're bored.
And I was never bored. I was just terrified.
No, nobody's disagreed with me yet on that one. It's, we see all this interesting stuff, but the actual, you know, day to day making the sausage type of thing a law is, we, if we're doing our job correctly, we beat as much of the drama out of it back in our office as we possibly can.
Exactly. You want no surprises whatsoever when you get to court. But
I've had
the episodes of drama. Yes, of course we all have, but we don't need to talk about those.
Oh my goodness! Yes, there's a greasy spot on the carpet in a judge's office in Tulsa that was all was left of me when he was finished with me back when I was an intern, because I didn't do my homework, you know, and went in there unprepared. So, and I notice on here too, very tantalizing. Why, look, another Kaylin Hendricks book.
Indeed, this is Unsub is the first book in a new series. Mm-hmm. It's not a terrible spoiler to say that Kaylin does survive to the end of UNSUB, and goes on. The next book will be published next year. So, yes, she is a homicide investigator. Murder seems to be her vocation, and she's always going to have a lot of work.
And the story sounds fascinating. You know, this one, this time it looks like you took your spark from Ted Bundy.
Yeah, as we said earlier, there are surprisingly a lot of killers out there who can give us inspiration for these stories. So yes, I succumbed to the inspiration. And then in the next book, which is called Into the Black Nowhere, Caitlin pursues a very slick, charming, devious killer across the West, starting in Texas and traveling through half the United States. So it's a cat and mouse game, and I hope people will like it too.
Again, it looks fascinating. I mean, it looks total, like, you know, Criminal Minds, that type of thing, which is a compliment. You know, that type of interwoven, very elaborate scenario and fantasy that gets that Caitlin now has to go after, because now it looks like she's actually part of the FBI or has been assigned to the FBI.
Right. Yeah.
And she gets to go into
with the behavioral analysis unit, and so she is still trying to, you know, get up to speed with an even more demanding form of homicide investigation and chase this guy down. So I had a great time writing it, so I hope people will have a good time enjoying it.
From the looks of the rave reviews that it's getting, I mean, when Don Winslow is saying you scared him,
that just warms my heart, you know, because he is a sweetheart, but he is a tough guy. I mean, he was a PI. He used to stake out Times Square and, you know, deal with all these really bad guys, and I feel I've crossed some kind of, you know, great finish line if I can scare him. So that pleased me very much.
Definitely. I mean, Lisa Scodellini, Don Winslow, you know, everybody just raving for this, not to mention all the usual suspects of, like, every newspaper there is. All seem to be on board with this. And you mentioned something in there too on your author page about Caitlin might be going into a different form of media.
Yes. CBS has bought UNSUB for development as a television series. So mm-hmm. I am just thrilled to death about that. They have hired an executive producer who is working on developing the pilot script and, you know, getting writers on board, and I will be involved in some capacity. It's all still fluid, but I'm just super excited. As you can hear, I'm still flustered by this whole thing. It's just it's great, and it's been bought by a production company that does a great job with crime dramas. Timberman Beverly, they did Justified. They do Elementary. They're doing the new SEAL Team show with David Boreanaz. It's going to be premiering next month. So it's I'm just really excited that they're behind this and putting all their oomph into it and getting some great, great writers involved. And it's kind of made my summer.
Oh, definitely. And I'm going to take a second here and announce the phone number that if anyone would like to call in and talk to Meg about her book or anything else, the number is 347-633-9609. And I want to make a shout out to Sally Gardner, who is Meg's mom. And please call in if you'd like to. I'd love to talk to you. So, comparison back to this comparison, how would you compare UNSUB with your previous series, like your Evan Delaney or Joe Beckett novels?
In a way, it's a bigger story in a way, because it deals with a huge supposed to be legendary, massive police investigation of this notorious serial case. So that was a bigger story that I took on. It spans generations, even though the action takes place over about 10 days in the story. The case crosses 25 years. And so the other thing that's involved in UNSUB is that I wanted to tell the story of the investigators. It's the first book I've written where the main character is a cop.
Mm-hmm.
I've written cops. I've loved writing cops. I've written about a number of female cops in both my other series who I just really, really loved writing about. But Caitlin is the first cop who is the heroine of the story. It's also about her and her father. Because I've decided that this case spanned a generation, that it had to be about the investigators who handled it from the beginning and at the end, and that the most powerful way that could be expressed was to have them be a father and daughter who were involved in it. So it's bigger in the sense of the story that it tells, and that it's got a family sweep in it as well, which I really, really loved writing, even though it's a father-daughter story, even though it's about hunting a serial killer. Yeah.
Are we going to be seeing Dad in the subsequent books?
I can't tell you anything that's going to happen in the subsequent books. My job is to keep you in suspense. Sorry.
No, I'm already intrigued by the entire series, because I enjoy series books. I like getting to know characters. And one question I always ask, even though you're very early in this series, when the second book comes out, basically are they more or less standalone that build on each other, or is it one that you kind of need to get in on the ground floor and follow through?
I always like to write novels that any reader could pick up and just read on their own and be satisfied, feel that they have entered into a story that is complete on its own. It has a beginning, a middle, and an end, and that the story it tells is, cohesive, and that they know where they are in it and will be happy with it, what they've read. That said, all my series do have, storylines that extend beyond a single book. So for people who love to start series at the beginning and read them straight through, there are always going to be storylines that develop throughout them. And some people might find it more satisfying to read them from the beginning. But I always think that what if somebody's just picking this book up completely cold, has no idea what the story's about, who these characters are, who I am, whether they're even in a bookstore, they find it on a bus bench someplace, would they be happy to read it? And I always want to make sure that they get something out of it as well as someone who's read the whole thing, the whole series.
Have you been leaving books on bus benches again?
I haven't, but maybe some people have.
I found a book or two in airline in the seat pockets.
As long as it wasn't an iPad, that's okay.
Definitely. And the funny story I just wanted to tell is how we met. I mean, here I am at BoucherCon in Raleigh. It's my very first BoucherCon. I'm there primarily as a fan. I mean, I've done my first book, but I'm still there as a fan. And how we were doing the floors we ended up staying on in the hotel, it seemed like every time the elevator opened, there you were standing at the panel. So it's like I had Meg Gardner as my own personal elevator operator through all of BCon.
It was crazy. It was like five times or something. But you didn't know that I was just all I did that whole weekend was ride.
You rode the elevator up
for you.
And yeah. And here I was pushing the buttons. I kept open. Well, and I kept ending up with Brad Parks as my doorman. So it's like this was like the greatest BCon ever.
It was fun. It was great. It was very well planned. It was a really wonderful week. It's like camp for writers. I mean, we just go and we...
Oh, I know.
But we sit around and just talk about books for 4 days. It's perfect. And we eat and have sleepaways. And, it's what we all look forward to.
Well, and one of my friends ended up with a key card to an unused hospitality suite. And we actually had our own party up there. It was awesome. We just went up and took it over. Her key card, as long as her key card still worked, we just used it all weekend. And I'm discovering more, too, like as I've gotten to know Pam Stack and some of the other people, of everything else that was going on around me that I didn't even know about. And that's the cool thing about VoucherCon. Oh, just like the get it, the down and out books writers and their party and everything else, most of whom I'm now friends with. It just was, like I said, it was just all going on around me without, you know, because that's the cool thing about BCon is it's like, you know, it's a box inside of a box inside of a box with 14 more boxes lined up around it. There's always something going on in the corners.
But
are you going to be
wonderful? I'm unfortunately not going to be able to make it to Toronto this year, which I'm very sad about. But what's wonderful and what it took me a little while to realize, and I always tell other people who are going there as writers, but, you know, this is a fan convention. This is the World Mystery Convention. This is put on by fans to get together and talk about mysteries. But writers have to realize that, you know, these are people, the people who come from all over the country and sometimes all over the world because they love these books. And these are people who who will spend their vacation time to come and talk to us and to other writers about what we do. And you really need to appreciate this and pay attention to who all these people are. I mean, I've met so many fascinating people who's, you know, like, well, what are you doing here? You never think, oh, this is just a reader. This is a pediatric cardiologist who, you know, spends her vacation time to go to Raleigh, North Carolina to come to a mystery convention. Or it's a retired microbiologist who now has the time to come and meet the authors that she's, you know, been reading for the last 50 years. So be honored that these people want to come and spend time with you.
Oh, I just had the great time. Like, one of my best pieces of swag is I got in line quick enough at Alfair Burke's table to get, she had these keychains for her new book, The X, that had a keychain on the cover. And I got one of the keychains, and it's like, yes!
Ooh, do you use it now?
It's on my shelf with my favorite little souvenirs and swag from around the country. And that's part of the fun of it, is just geeking out and getting signed novels and I'm braving the book room and that type of thing. It's a great time. Yeah, I can't make it to Toronto either, but I will be in Florida with bells on. And we'll probably be broadcasting there.
Oh, good. Okay.
Yes. One of the other shows in the Authors on the Air network, Skid Row Chatter with Tom Pitts, he always does an ad hoc broadcast with kind of the neo-noir writers, a lot of the down and out authors and other noir writers. And I can see, too, just throwing open and doing some spontaneous broadcast too, because all I need is a laptop and a headset, and I'm there.
There you
so
go.
I'm really looking forward.
Well, you can find me in the elevator.
Absolutely, we'll do a broadcast from the elevator if we can get a Wi-Fi signal. I mean, who else had, you know, like I said, I had Meg Gardner as my elevator operator and Brad Parks as my doorman. I mean, this is like about the greatest BCon ever.
Well, we didn't manage to get the elevator stuck and have to climb out through the, you know, out through the roof Die Hard style, but we can work on that for next time.
This is true. I did once get trapped in an elevator at the Tulsa County Courthouse with about 18 other people.
Were they all defendants?
The
people all chained together? Or was it lawyers?
Combination of all of the above, defendants and lawyers. And I have never in my entire life had claustrophobia before that day. Because it was getting intense in there, and it was the old, they're prying the doors open, and it was work release inmates that, you know, were sticking their head and they're going, how y'all doing? We'll have you out in a minute.
Now you got to put that in a novel.
A lot of little bits and pieces did make it in and are making it into my series, that is for sure. And then I'm glad, too, I was able to entertain you by taking Unsub on my cross-country road trip with me.
Oh, it was great. I saw, Terry, you've been posting all these pictures of Unsub at a collection of fine diners and, you know, roadside dive restaurants, and I the book looks like it was having a great time on the table with your waffles and chicken and iced tea. So thank you.
Absolutely, it was great because it was my reading material while I was traveling, and that's part of what I do at this show. That's the reason it's called the Blue Plate Special. Is I actually collect restaurant china, vintage, the old cups and everything from the old restaurants. Like right now on my desk here, I have my Waffle House cup on my desk here, and so. It just seemed natural. When Pam asked me about hosting a show, she asked me what I wanted to call it. Well, there's already a show that's dedicated to noir. There's shows dedicated to, you know, really gritty crime fiction to thrillers. But I thought, I like all of those. I like a little bit of everything. So I just thought it's going to be the Blue Plate Special, and y'all are going to be, because you'll never know what's going to be on the buffet from week to week.
Well, I'm glad that you served me up here tonight. I appreciate it.
Oh, I'm just thrilled. I mean, this is my blitz month. I'm typically going to be on Friday nights, but you know, John Shepherd is on Friday, and he's a down and out author who has an Anthony nomination for best novella. You know, and he's absolutely thrilled at being up next after Meg Gardner.
Oh, well, tell him hello.
And, you know, Friday the 11th, we have military sci-fi writer Mike Cole, who I can best describe his books as if Tom Clancy wrote the X-Men.
There you go. Yeah.
I mean, they are intense. Chuck Wendig, we will finally find out how many bees he can fit in his beard. You know, this is hard. This is hard hitting journalism here.
It is.
So do you have anything else cooking other than the Caitlin series? Are you going to be revisiting any of your other series?
We'll see. I'm very busy writing the new Caitlin Hendricks novel, possibly working with the TV, developing the TV series. I've written a few short stories lately. I have a short story in the book that was published last fall, Echoes of Sherlock Holmes. Edited by Laurie R. King and Les Klinger. I found out that after writing 350-page novels for the last 15 years, that writing a 20-page short story just kills me. It's hard. It's terrible. It took me, you know, I was just agonizing over how to do this little short story. It's quite a different discipline. So doing that and learning how to live in Austin. We've been here for a few years now, so I'm getting used to the barbecue and the heat and, you know, finding snakes in my garage and things like that. But
welcome back to the Midwest.
Well, thank you. I was born in Oklahoma, grew up in California, lived most of my life in California, but my family spent quite a long time living in England. So the summer weather in Texas is a bit different than it is in London. But
where from Oklahoma are you from?
Oklahoma City.
Okay. Because I went to law school in Tulsa, so I lived in and I stayed in Tulsa for a few years after I got married, when we moved to Kansas. I liked it there. I mean, I really liked Tulsa, or as we, you know, the Versailles of Oklahoma.
And right. Well, I'm from the capital, so.
Ooh.
No, I love Oklahoma, and most of my family is still there, so it's always great. I was up there on the book tour just a few weeks ago, and it was a whole lot of fun. So
definitely, I wanted to come so badly, but I had a cold, and I didn't want to be accused of bringing the plague to Oklahoma. I really wanted to meet Lou Burney.
Next time.
Really wanted to meet Lou Burney.
Well, he'll be at a VoucherCon sometime, and I'll introduce you to him. So he's a fantastic author. If everybody else doesn't know Lou Burney, he's won the Edgar last year for Best Paperback Original for The Long and Far Away Gone, which is set in Oklahoma City and is just a fantastic, beautifully written, very moving
book.
Novel. Yeah.
That is a simply amazing book. That's one of the ones I blogged about because he captures something about Oklahoma City he just captures so well. And having the character go home again. And that's always a hard one. That's always a, that's always a tough one when you have to go home again. On Monday night, I have a writer from Austin coming on, and he does what he calls barrio noir. Definitely, definitely going to be a different look at Austin.
Right.
His,
well, good.
His books are I know his first book is his name is Gabino Iglesias, and his first book called Zero Saints is quite amazing. He's going to be a lot of fun to have on the air. So you're not making it to Toronto this year. Are you going to be showing up running the elevators at any conferences?
You just never know. I might, you know, just take a road trip and, you know, turn up someplace and start operating the elevators, and we'll see what happens. You never know. Memphis or Chicago or the Overlook Hotel.
Or I highly, highly recommend in November is making the run up to Milwaukee and coming to Murder and Mayhem in Milwaukee.
I did that last November. It was fantastic. I had the privilege of interviewing Sarah Paretsky at that conference, and I just bowed down before her because she's such an icon and such an inspiration. But it's a wonderful local conference in Milwaukee, and that was the first time I'd ever been to Milwaukee. So don't tell anybody, but I don't drink beer, so it was wasted on me. But other than that, it was a great
weekend.
It's okay.
I couldn't make it last November, just at the very last minute something came up, but it's definitely on my schedule for this November, and I'd love to see you there.
Well, you never
know. I hope you can make it. Well, there's nothing more I can say about Unsub other than it is fantastic, and that's from someone who reads crime and thrillers almost exclusively. And I can't wait. I hope everything with CBS works out and it makes it onto the schedule, because I think it's tailor-made for it. And I know they've got to be looking for, you know, they're looking for that next crime drama, and I think they've found it here, because there's just so much to work with.
I appreciate that very much. I really do. Coming from another
and
author.
And you've got to come back when the new book comes out.
That's a deal.
Because by then we'll know what's going on. So I've got a couple little housekeeping things here to do, but I want to thank you so much for taking the time out to be on the buffet and talk with me, because it's just been wonderful for me as well. And if you enjoyed this broadcast, it was made possible through the sponsorship of Down and Out Books. They're celebrating 6 years of award-winning crime fiction, and you can check them out at www.downandoutbooks.com. And also this year at BoucherCon in Toronto, they have 6 Anthony nominations, which is pretty amazing. On Friday night, one of those nominees will be here, John Shepherd, to talk about his Shill series, which is up for the award. And then the legal stuff, because everybody's a lawyer here. This podcast is copyrighted and wholly owned by the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network, LLC. You can follow the Blue Plate Special and Authors on the Air on Facebook for information on new broadcasts. Thank you very much, Meg, and I'll be talking to you soon.
Thanks a lot, Terry.
Take care now. Bye.